And I'm very grateful to everybody for coming, for devoting time to be with us this morning. There are more source sheets being printed. We had a collating accident. When you have a 44-page booklet, that creates problems. So they'll be here eventually. We also have some more Tanakhs, but I would ask people if you could please share the Tanakhs and share the source sheets. Sharing is good. Our 11:30 shiur is on a Devorah, smasher of stereotypes. For those who have the stone Tanakh, you can find her story on page 593, Shoftim, Judges, chapters 4 and 5. I am grateful to our sponsors for dedicating the program for this class in particular, Shana and Dr. Laser Friedman, Leila Nishmas, Harav Yechiel Michel, Ben Harav Eliezer Lippa, Zichrono Livracha. Also grateful to Yeshivat Or Chaim for providing the space, as well as Shari Shemayim for providing the green stone Tanakh that people are using. Also, because I think I heard a ding before from someone's phone, if people could silence their phones, that would be wonderful. I'm speaking for the next hour and a half. Okay. So we start out this hour and a half, we start out with Devorah. And if you take a look at the sheets, and actually I see that whoever was up here before me took their source sheets, so I don't have a copy. I'm going to have to borrow, because I'm going to want to tell people we're up to 1, 2, 3, and so on. Thank you. We're printing new ones, but they are being collated. Okay, thank you. Okay, so if you take a look at the first source on your source sheet, this is from the 1733 Devorah Oratorio by Samuel Humphreys, for which Handel, appropriately enough for today, arranged the music. If you take a look at it, and I bring it not because of the lyrics, I bring it not because of the oratorio per se, I bring it simply because it shows the popularity of the story of Devorah. This is a story with real broad appeal. And one reason it's popular is that Devorah plays against type. She smashes stereotypes, and we'll talk about which ones she smashed as we go through this. We're going to ask the question of which images did she break? Things that we thought we knew about the way people act in Tanakh. What do we find that she does differently? And was there a price to be paid for it? As we're going to say for all of our topics, and I assume has already been said, what I'm presenting you in half an hour is an outline and introduction. V'idach zil gemur, you have to then go on to learn the rest. So our story begins roughly the 12th century before the Common Era. The Jews had entered the land of Canaan under Yehoshua about 160 years beforehand. Devorah is the fourth of our Shoftim. Shoftim we usually loosely translate as judges. At this point in our history, the mountains up north in the land of Israel were under our control. However, the Canaanim were very strong on the ground, the low-lying areas, especially in an area called Emek Yisrael, which is a very large area centrally located in northern Israel. And so we're stuck up in the mountains. They have the low-lying areas. That means we can't get down. We can't have the fields you would have in a low-lying area. They dominate largely because they have something we don't. They have chariots. Right? We had an allergy to horses from the time we left Egypt. The Canaanites had them and used them. And at the beginning of chapter 4 in Shoftim, in Judges, we find that Hashem has given us to Yavin, the king of Canaan. Yavin had reigned in Chatzor. His general is a man named Sisera. Now, Yavin is a long story in his own right. It seems to be a hereditary title, because we met a king Yavin already back in the book of Yoshua, back in the book of Joshua. Barbanel thinks it's actually the same one, and he just lived a really long time. Others suggest it's simply a hereditary title, like Paro, like Abimelech. So Yavin controls us for 20 years. He has 900 chariots. And we cry out to God, and into this enters Devorah. So again, if you're using the Stone Tanakh, it's page 591. It is Shoftim, Judges chapter 4, sentence 4. And Deborah is introduced to us as Isha Nevi'ah. She is a prophet. Eshet Lapidot. Eshet Lapidot is a term I'm not ready to translate yet. We're going to come back to what it means. Those who are using the Stone Tanakh see that she is the wife of Lapidot. We're going to come back to that. But she is the Shofetet. She is Shofad Yisrael Beitai. She leads the Jews. She judges the Jews at that time. V'hi Yosheves Tachas Tomer Devorah. She sits under what is known as the palm tree of Devorah. More about the palm tree later. Bein Haramah, Bein Beit El, Bahar Ephraim, on Har Ephraim, and by Aloi Lev and Israel Amishpat, people come to her for justice. Devorah has a message from God. And the story continues. And I'm going to be using the English or translating it to English as we go in the interest of time. But again, you have a Tanakh in front of you. You can see the original. So she summons Barak ben Avi Noam from Kedesh Naphtali. He is some sort of leader, some sort of general. Right now, we don't know his relationship with Devorah. She summons him and she says to him, Halo Tziva Hashem Elokei Yisrael, God has commanded you. Go on to Har Tavor with 10,000 men from Naphtali and from Zebulun. Rally a force on Mount Tavor. Then, I'm going to cause Sisra, the general of the Canaanim, to go to Nahal Kishon with his chariots. As I said in the first class, the 9 a.m. class, everything here is presented as Hashem causing. We don't get the human elements here. In other words, we don't know what Sisra thought he was doing when he went to Har Tavor. We don't know what Sisra thought. It could be he thought Barak has rallied 10,000 Jews. Something military is going on. I better bring my forces. But Hashem says, I am going to cause Sisra to come there, unsatiyo biyadecha, and I'm going to put him into your hands. We're up to sentence 8. Barak says to Devorah, thanks but no thanks. He says, if you're going to go with me, then I'm going to go. You don't go with me, I'm not going. Not going. Ralbag says he wants her merit on his side. Abarbanel gives a different picture. If you take a look at source number 2 on your sheets, he didn't say this as one who doubted her prophecy. It's not that he doubts it. And he doesn't say it as somebody who's going to violate the words of a prophet either. But because Israel were afraid and terrified of Sisra's forces, his chariots, his masses, so Barak says, I'm going to summon them to war. They're not going to go with me. They're not interested in following me. They're going to consider it dangerous. So he says, Devorah, I need you to come with me so that they're going to see the Nevi'ah. They're going to see the prophet who commanded this, and then they're going to follow because they'll believe that this is what Hashem wants them to do. So Barak says, I can't do this. I need you on my side. And Devorah says, fine. Halochei lechimach, I'm going to go with you, but you should know, you're not going to find any glory where you're going. Sisra is going to be given to a woman instead of to a man. You're not getting any glory for this. The commentators explain what she's saying is, you're not brave enough to do this, so you won't get glory that way for being brave. And you're not going to be the one who gets the credit for the victory either. So you're not going to get glory that way. And we'll see, in fact, that Sisra falls to Yael, but that's going to be the next session. That's the 12 o'clock session. So they go to war. Sisra hears about Barak rallying troops. He rallies his 900 iron chariots. Devorah sends Barak into war. In Pasuk Yedaleh, in sentence 14, we find her say to Barak, get up, this is the day when you're supposed to do it. Devorah does not personally go into battle. Sisra's forces are routed by God, chased away by the sword. No one remains, and Sisra runs away. You're starting to see a picture here about males and females in this section, right? Devorah is the one who says, let's go, and rallies everybody. Barak says, I don't want to go. And Sisra, when his troops are under attack, flees in the other direction. That's the image right now, is this very female-male split. It's fascinating, and it gets better. Sisra does not flee with everybody else. I brought it for you from Radak in source number 3. He knew that he couldn't flee successfully where everybody else was going, so he says, I'm going to run in a different direction, and that leads to the story of Yael and Sisra, which again is in the next year. But we end up winning the war. Chapter 5, on page 593, gives us Devorah's song that she sang afterwards. she moralizes to the Jews about sin and punishment, about the imperative for the Shvatim, for the tribes to work together, about the fact that Hashem is on our side. Interestingly, when the song begins, chapter 5, sentence 1, we're told, "Vatashar Devorah uvarak ben Avinoam." When I learned this song in school, they told us it was Shirat Devorah. It was Devorah's song. And that's the way we memorized it. It was as Shirat Devorah. But here it says it's actually Devorah and Barak. What's he doing here? So in source number 4, Radak answers the question for us. Rabbi David Kimchi says, "Lefisha Devorah ikar hamaseh," because Devorah was the real singer here. She was the one who composed this poem. Like in the incident of the Lashon Hara about Moshe, Miriam and Aharon, Miriam gets the credit because Miriam is the one to initiate. She is the main speaker. So to hear, Devorah gets the credit. And Abarbanel in source number 5 says it's Devorah who creates and arranges it, and Barak joins in order to sing the song with her. What is actually said here in this poem? So she begins by saying, "Bifra praos v'Yisrael." When Peresh Ayin, something that is wild, or sometimes it's a claim of payment. Here they translate it as vengeance, is inflicted on Israel. Behisnadev am, when the people are mitnadev. What does mitnadev mean? To volunteer, exactly. That is the key word for this entire poem, as we'll see a little bit later on. When the people volunteered, bless Hashem. And that's her refrain, is that we should bless God. She moves into what seems to be a description of what happened at Har Sinai. Hashem left Seir, Hashem came from Edom, the earth shook, the clouds dripped water, the mountains ran before God. Zeh Sinai mipnei Hashem Elokei Yisrael. She describes how Hashem came to give the Torah at Har Sinai, and her point is to make a comparison between today, what's happening for them, the victory over Canaan, and the victory that they had way back when, so to speak, when Hashem gave us the Torah at Sinai. But she says, things went bad. Once we had Hashem clearly with us, and we had the presentation of the Torah at Har Sinai, but that's not where we were now. Now things got bad. And so in Psukim Vav Techet, sentences 6 to 8, she says, things were terrible. Chadlu arachot. People could not travel on the roads. Halchei netivot yelchu arachot akalkalot. People had to take circuitous routes in order to get where they wanted to go because they were afraid of being attacked when they came down out of the mountains. There were no open cities left. And then look what she says in Pasuk Zayin in sentence 7. She says, Ad shakamti devora, shakamti em b'Yisrael. Until I, Devorah, arose, I arose as a mother in Israel. That was when everything changed, she describes. The idea of rising as a mother in Israel, Abarbanel says, is that she's saying that she looked out for the Jews the way a mother would look out for their child. And then she continues to exhort the people to praise Hashem. We're continuing on to page 595. And then take a look at Pasuk Yud Bet, sentence 12. Uri, Uri, Devorah. Wake up, Devorah, she sings to herself. Uri, Uri, Dabri Shir, speak your poetry. Kum Barak, Ushavei Shavicha ben Avinoam. Rise, Barak. Take your captives, son of Avinoam. She seems to be exhorting herself to do something. And we're going to have to come back to that and find out what that's about. And then the rest of the song I'm going to hold until the next class, the 12 o'clock one, because that's going to be about Yael. But what we're seeing here in this chapter, to sum up the story as we've seen it so far, is that Devorah has a message from Hashem. She is the Shofetet. She is the Shofet, the judge. She is also the Navi. At the time, she is the prophet. And she has a message for Barak, saying time to rally the troops. Get the Jews, I'm going to get. Hashem says, I am going to get the Canaanites to come meet you. You're going to win the war. And they do win the war. Sisra, the Canaanite general, flees. And Devorah then, as we read, we skipped the story of the end of Sisera's life that we're going to come back to in the next class, but Devorah then sings a song in which she talks a lot about blessing Hashem. She praises those who volunteered, and again, we're going to come back to that later. And we'll see the story with Yael as well later on, but she in particular talks about her own role, and that's going to be really important. Because now we need to talk about our theme, Devorah, smasher of stereotypes. So first of all, Devorah is both Shofetet and Nevi'ah, judge, as well as was prophet, meaning political leader and religious leader. She has both. That is extremely rare. Meaning, we have, give or take, 15 or 17 shoftim. A little bit depends on whether you count. Abimelech has a shofet, do you count? Shmuel has a shofet. But basically, a 15 to 17 shoftim. We only have two in the book of shoftim who actually have prophecy. Devorah is one, and Gideon seems to be the other one, and that's it. If you count Eli and Shmuel from the beginning of the book of Shmuel, they're also shoftim. They also have prophecy of some kind. But that's really it. The idea that somebody is a political leader and a religious leader in one, frankly, is a model we generally avoid. Right? We usually don't like that. We usually have a separation of powers, and it works really well. The Rambam writes in Mora Nevuchim, in source number 6, I brought you my English translation there, that the judges, the shoftim who we had, tended to have Ruach HaKodesh, a low level of prophecy. Hashem is manifest upon them, Hashem strengthens them, but not the explicit prophecy that Devorah will have. That's pretty rare, that you have somebody playing both roles. That's number one. That's one stereotype she breaks. That you're going to have this sort of isolation of the two positions. She combines them. Number two is, of course, that she is a female shofet. Because she's the only one we have on the books. Out of all the 15 or 17 who I mentioned earlier, she's the only one who is female. Now, honestly, my personal preference when I read Tanakh is not to break it down into this one is a male and this one is a female. I tend to think that they're all meant to be role models for all of us. But she's the one who did it. Meaning she's the one who calls attention to it. She's the one who says to Barak, okay, you're not going to get glory because a woman is going to be the one. And then she talks about, I arose and I was a mother in Israel. So she played the gender card before I did. So I feel like it's somewhat fair to do so. But one question you have to ask, we're not going to deal with it at length, is what do you mean a female judge? I thought that that's supposed to be a male position. If you take a look at source number 7, the Sifri, Halachic Medrash on the Book of Devarim, says that women don't get appointed as king or queen, even though we will find out about Queen Atalia later on, who does seem to have been a queen. But the general trend in halacha seems to be that that this position, like it or not, is a male position. So there are a few answers that are offered, but one answer which Ramban brings in source number 8 is really important in understanding Devorah's story. Ramban wrote in the 13th century, she judged Israel, means she led by her word, they acted based on her advice like a queen. Granted, the Sifri says, king, not queen, they accorded her the dictatorial status of a queen. Alternatively, accepted her words willingly. This will apply for Atalia, and it applies to Devorah. The key thing is, the people look to her as a leader. You can say all you like about Melech Velo Malka, that it's supposed to be a male, but the people looked at Devorah and said, we want that one. We want her to lead us, and we are going to bring her our problems to solve. When we have a dispute, we are going to go to her to serve as a judge. And that gives her the authority of the position. However, if she's going to do that, that creates certain challenges. Because more often than not, the people who are bringing the problems to her are going to be male. How are you going to resolve that? So the commentators look at chapter 4, sentence 5, which said that she sat beneath the palm tree of Devorah. This is a very odd thing, the palm tree of Devorah. Can anyone tell me why it's really odd that she would have a palm tree? We talked about where this is geographically. You're up in the mountains up north. Palm trees? Seriously? That's cedar territory. That's not palm tree territory. What in the world are you doing with palm trees? This has to be intentional. It also sounds like it was a known landmark. She was sitting beneath the palm tree of Devorah, and all the readers are expected to know what the palm tree of Devorah is. So this is a very strange thing. So the Gemara in Megillah offers us an approach here, which I brought you in source number 9. It offers me two ideas. One idea is the symbolism of a palm tree. The date palm doesn't branch out. meaning as it grows, right, you have this long trunk, and then you have your leaves at the top. And the idea is that it's all unified, and we were unified in our service of Hashem. We were all loyal to God. And that's one approach. Second approach that the Gemara offers, the Gemara actually mentions it first, again, it's source number 12, number 9 on your sheet, was that she did it this way in order to avoid being alone with any of the men who were going to show up. But Bar Bidel says that's pshat in the pasuk. He says that's a simple read. She goes outdoors. She doesn't want anyone to be able to undermine her position by accusing her of impropriety with the men who show up. This is a whole discussion for our generation, but it's not for right now. But she has a major role as a judge, and it is a quasi-military position. Shoftim generally let us in war as well, even though we said she didn't go out onto the battlefield, and Abarbanel makes that point. Nonetheless, she's occupying this leadership position, which includes a military one, and so that's a second stereotype she breaks. The first stereotype she breaks is she combines religious and political leadership. The second one is that she's a woman who is serving as shofet. And then the third one, and this to me is the most fascinating, and I don't think this is my own novelty, but I don't remember where I saw it before, so I'm not claiming it is my own, but it might be. Devorah is not identified with a male family member. Generally speaking, the female leaders we find in Tanakh are identified with a male relative, even when they are great in their own way, in their own right. Meaning, Sarah is the wife of Abraham, right? Rivka is the wife of Yitzchak. Miriam is the sister of Aharon at one point. Hannah is the mother of Shmuel. As great as they are in their own right, Tanakh tends to present them with their relatives. So who's Deborah's male relative? Lapidot, who shows up how many times in our story? Not to mention who may not exist. There's a lot of debate regarding this business of Eshe Lapidot. I said I would come back to it, I'm coming back to it. Radak and Ralbag say it isn't her husband's name. Doesn't make any sense, because we don't know him. You don't name someone. You say, she's the wife of Lapidot, and he has nothing to do with anything, never shows up in any genealogy. Not to mention, it's a really weird first name in Tanakh. So they say Lapidot is what it sounds like. Lapidot are torches. And that's what she used to do. The Gemara in Megillah in source number 11 says that she is a woman of Lapidot. She made wicks for use in the temple. But Radak and Ralbag say it means, I misspoke. Radak and Ralbag say that her husband, it's Eshet Lapidot, her husband is Barak. Sorry. Her husband is Barak. Barak means lightning, and Lapidot are torches. I find that intriguing. I don't understand why wouldn't you say Eshet Barak, right? Because that's what he's going to be called in the next sentence. I find that, Radak is usually very literal, Abag is usually very literal. I don't really understand the association of Barak and Lapidot. The Gemara is the one that says she made torches. That's source number 11 on your sheet. Abarbanel says that's not what it means at all. It means a woman of fire. That's what it means. Take a look at number 12 on your sheet. He said she's described as Isha Nevi'ah, the prophetess, demonstrating the perfection of her intellect and her readiness for prophecy to the point that the prophetic spirit rested upon her. Woman of Lapidot demonstrated she was a mighty woman with very strong and energetic deeds like a fiery torch. And Abarbanel in fact believes, he goes on to say, that she is single. She's not married. Radak and Ralbag suggest, like what the Medrash says about Moshe, that she had been married and that she separated from her husband because of her prophecy. Because remember, if you take the view that she's married to Barak, you now have a problem. She has to summon Barak from Kedesh Naphtali. He's her husband. They don't see each other. Radak and Rabak say no, because they separated, because she is a prophet. She's not there for him. So she has to actually summon him. Interestingly, there's also a midrash which is quoted in Rashi on your sheet, in source number 14. Rashi comments on the cities we mentioned as the places that she lived, that this wasn't actually her residence, but rather she was wealthy. She made her money in those communities, which means that you now have Devorah presented as potentially a single woman, certainly not associated with any male who's clearly identified in the text, and an independently wealthy woman as well. Breaking the stereotype that we're used to thinking of the one who is associated with some male within Tanakh. So what do we get out of this? Number one, I think we're meant to recognize a valid, positive smashing of stereotypes here, meaning Devorah is presented as a leader and in a very positive light. Frankly, among the Shoftim, she's at the top, right? Because a lot of the other Shoftim are decidedly not. They have scandal after scandal with various Shoftim, and Devorah seems to rise above that. It teaches us that this can happen. The idea of smashing these stereotypes, the merger of religious and political leadership, would happen later on. The Gemara in Sota points out, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi, the canonizer of the Mishnah, is also the political leader of the Jews of his day. Like Devorah, a woman can be accepted and respected for her greatness. When she achieves, the people recognize it. And she can accomplish without being identified with some leading male who is connected to her. However, because there's always a however, there's a cautionary note in the Gemara. If you're going to smash stereotypes, make sure that you don't flaunt it. Make sure you don't walk around saying, look at me, I am a smasher of stereotypes. Because that is going to bring discredit on a person. Devorah made two comments to Barak. Number one, sure, I'll go along, but you're not getting any credit. Number one. And number two, in her song, she said, until I arose, right? I shakamti Devorah, shakamti im Yisrael, I, a mother in Israel, arose, and I turned things around. And the Gemara is very uncomfortable with that. In source number five, they note the name Devorah, in Aramaic, is ziborta, which means a wasp, something that stings. So, Ziborta ksivba batishlach batikra leBarak. She sent for Barak. Ihilo aza legabei. She did not go to him. Now that's actually part of a greater theme in Tanakh. Whether the king has to go to the prophet or the prophet has to go to the king happens with Yeshaya and Chizkiah. Happens at other times. With Yiftach and Pinchas. But they're trying to show here an element of personality which maybe is not so positive. The one that says, you come to me. Calling her a wasp is making a statement about her sting. And it plays out in that sentence that we read from her song, chapter 5, sentence 12, where she has to say, Uri, Uri, Devorah. Wake up, Devorah. I see the English, they translated it, give praise. And that will be one way to read it. It's a call of prophecy. Wake up, like, let's get going. However, that's not the way the Gemara read it. The Gemara read it as her saying, wake up, because she lost her prophecy at one point. Meaning, she was a prophet. She said, look at me, I am the one saving everybody. And because she said, look at me, I'm the one saving everybody, therefore, she actually lost her prophecy. And then Uri, Uri, Devorah is either her or the nation saying, get going, we need you to be a prophet, asking her to restart. But the idea here is, again, to sum up what we've said, and then we're going to go into Yael next, that she's presented very positively. She runs against type, political, religious, woman as leader, woman as independent and independently wealthy. And she's given to us as a role model, but know that if you're going to smash stereotypes, you have to be really, really careful about how you present yourself. There's a lot more to be said, but we're going to start Yael in looks like a minute and a half. I believe there are more sheets. Are there more sheets? We're working on generating more sheets. We're not generating more Tanakh, so if people could please share, that would be great. Thank you very much.